Chapter 4. Aklulka's Husband. Late one night, at about 11 o'clock, I had been sleeping some time and woke up with a start. The wan, fitful flame of the distant lamp barely illumined the room. Nearly everyone was fast asleep, even Ustyantsev. In the quiet of the night, I heard his laboured respiration, the rattling in his throat with every breath. Outside in the corridor sounded the muffled tread of an approaching patrol. A rifle butt struck the floor with a low, dull sound. The door opened. The corporal entered and counted the sick, stepping softly about the room. After a minute or so he withdrew, leaving a fresh sentry at the door. The patrol went off, and silence reigned once more. It was only then that I noticed, not far from me, two prisoners who were not asleep. They seemed to be holding a muttered conversation. That was by no means uncommon, for it often happened that a couple of patients whose beds adjoined and who had not exchanged a word for weeks would all of a sudden break out into conversation in the dead of night, and one of them would tell the other his life story. They had probably been talking for some considerable time. I had not heard the beginning of it, and could not at first grasp what they were saying. But little by little I grew familiar with the muttered sounds, and understood all that was going on. I had not the least desire to sleep, and could not but listen. One man was telling his story with some warmth, propped up on his elbow and leaning towards his companion. He was plainly excited to no little degree. The necessity of speech was upon him. The other sat on his pallet with a gloomy and indifferent air, his legs stretched out flat on the mattress. Now and again he murmured some reply, more out of politeness than interest, and continually took snuff from a horn box. This was a soldier named Cherevyin from the penal battalion, a morose, cold-reasoning pedant, an idiot full of self-esteem. The narrator was one Chichkov. He was about 30 years old, a civilian convict whom I had never observed. Indeed, during the whole time I was in prison, I could never work up the smallest interest in him, for he was a conceited, heady fellow. Sometimes he would hold his tongue for weeks together, and look sulky and brutal enough for anything. Then, all of a sudden, he would interrupt a conversation, behave outrageously, fly into a white-hot rage about nothing at all, and tell long, ridiculous yarns about one barrack or another, blowing abuse on all the world, and acting like a man beside himself. Then someone would give him a hiding, and he would have another fit of silence. He was a mean and cowardly fellow, and the object of general contempt. Short of stature, he had little flesh on him, but his wandering gaze sometimes became abstracted and seemed to reflect some vague form of thought. When he told you anything, he worked himself into a fever of excitement, gesticulated wildly, broke off suddenly, and passed to another subject, lost himself in fresh details, and at last forgot altogether what he was talking about. He was often embroiled in argument, was Chichkov, and as he poured abuse on his adversary, he spoke with a sentimental whine and was affected almost to tears. He was not a bad hand at playing the balalaika, and had a weakness for it. On festival days he would display his prowess as a dancer when encouraged by others, and he danced by no means badly. It was quite easy to make him do what you wanted, not that he was compliant by nature, but he liked to please and to strike up an intimacy. For some considerable while that night I could not follow Chichkov's story. It seemed to me as though he were constantly rambling from the point to talk of something else. Perhaps he noticed that Cherevyin paid little attention to his narrative, but I fancy that he was minded to overlook this indifference so as not to take offence. When he went out on business, he continued, everyone saluted him politely, paid him every respect, a fellow with money, that.
You say he was in some trade or other?
Yes, trade indeed. The trading class in my country is wretchedly poor, poverty-stricken, in fact. The women walk miles to the river to fetch water for their gardens.
They wear themselves to the bone, and yet when winter comes they haven't enough to make even cabbage soup. I tell you, it's starvation. But that fellow had a good parcel of land, which was cultivated by his three serfs. He had beehives, too, and sold his honey. He was also a cattle dealer, and was a much respected man in the neighbourhood. He was aged and quite grey. His 70 years lay heavy on his old bones. When he came to market in his fox-fur pelisse, everyone saluted him. "Good day, Aukudim Trofimtich." "Good day," he'd return. "How are you getting along?" He never despised any man. "God keep you, Aukudim Trofimtich. How goes business with you?" "Business is as good as a tallow's white with me. And how's yours, Dad?" "We've just got a sufficient livelihood to pay the price of sin, always sweating over our bit of land." "Lord preserve you, Aukudim Trofimtich." He never despised any man. His advice was always worth having. Every one of his words was worth a rouble. A great reader he was, quite a scholar, but he stuck to religious books. He would call his wife and say to her, "Listen, woman, mark well what I say." Then he would embark on some explanation. Marie Stepanovna was not exactly an old woman. She was his second wife, and he had married her in order to beget the children whom his first wife had failed to bear him. He had two boys who were still quite young, for the second of them was born when his father was close on 60. His daughter, Akulka, was 18 years old, and she was the eldest.
"Your wife, eh?"
"Wait a bit, wait a bit. Anyway, Filka Morozov begins to kick up a row. Says he to Aukudim, 'Let's split the difference. Give me back my 400 rubles. I'm not your beast of burden. I don't want to do any more business with you, and I don't want to marry your Akulka. I want to have my fling now that my parents are dead. I'll drink my money and then join the army. In 10 years I'll come back here a field marshal.'" Aukudim gave him back his money, all he had of his. You see, he and Filka's father had been business partners. "You're a lost man," he said to Filka. "Whether I'm a lost man or not, old Greybeard, you're the biggest cheat I know. You try to screw a fortune out of 4 farthings and pick up all the dirt to do it with. Bah, look at you, piling up here, digging deep there. The devil only knows why. I've got a will of my own, I tell you. All the same, I won't take your Akulka. I've slept with her already." "How dare you insult a respectable father, a respectable girl? When did you sleep with her, you spawn of a sucker? You dog, you hound, you!" cried Aukudim, shaking with wrath. Filka told us all this later. "I'll not only not marry your daughter, but I'll take good care that no one else does, not even Mikita Grigorych, the disreputable wench. We had a fine time together, she and I, all last autumn, but I don't want her at any price. All the money in the world wouldn't make me take her." Then the fellow went and had high jinks for a while, and the town was unanimous in condemning him. He gathered a whole lot of other fellows round him, for he had a heap of money. He carried on like that for 3 months, such recklessness as you never heard of. Every penny went. "I want to see the end of this money," he said. "I'll sell the house, everything. Then I'll enlist or go on the tramp." He was drunk from morning to night, and went about with a carriage and pair. The girls liked him well, I tell you, for he played the guitar very nicely. Then it's true that he had been intimate with this girl, Akulka. Wait, wait, can't you? I had just buried my father. My mother lived by baking gingerbread. We got our livelihood by working for Aukudim. Barely enough to eat. A precious hard life it was. We had a bit of land the other side of the woods and grew corn there, but when my father died I went on the spree. I made my mother give me money, but I had to give her a good hiding first. You are very wrong to beat her. That's a great sin. Sometimes I was drunk the whole blessed day. We had a house that was just tumbling to pieces with dry rot. Still, it was our own. We were as near famished as could be. For weeks together we had nothing but rags to chew. Mother nearly killed me with one stupid trick or another, but I didn't care a curse. Filka Marosov and I were always together day and night. "Play the guitar to me," he'd say, "and I'll lie in bed the while. I'll throw money to you, for I'm the richest chap in the world." The fellow could not speak without lying. There was only one thing. He wouldn't touch a thing if it had been stolen. "I'm no thief, I'm an honest man. Let's go and daub Akulka's door with pitch, for I won't have her marry Mikita Grigorych. I'll stick to that." Daubing the door of a house where a young girl lives is done to show that she has been dishonoured. The old man had long meant to give his daughter to this Mikita Grigorych. He was a man well on in life, in trade, too, and wore spectacles. When he heard the story of Akulka's bad conduct, he said to her old father, "That would be a terrible disgrace to me, Aukudim Trofimtich. On the whole, I've made up my mind not to marry. It's too late." So he went and daubed Akulka's door all over with pitch. When we'd done that, her folks almost beat her to death. Her mother, Maria Stepanovna, cried, "I shall die of it," while the old man said, "If we were living in the days of the patriarchs, I'd have hacked her to pieces on a block. But now everything in this world is rottenness and corruption." Sometimes the neighbours from one end of the street to the other heard Akulka's screams. She was whipped from morning to evening, and Filka would cry out in the marketplace before everybody, "Akulka's a jolly girl to get drunk with. I've given it those people between the eyes. They won't forget me in a hurry." Well, one day I met Akulka. She was going for water with her bucket, so I cried out to her, "A fine morning, Akulka Kodimovna, my pet. You're the girl who knows how to please the chaps. Who's living with you now, and where do you get the money for your finery?" That's just what I said to her. She opened her eyes as wide as you please. No more flesh on her than on a log of wood. She had only just given me a look, but her mother thought she was larking with me, and cried from her doorstep, "Impudent hussy! What do you mean by talking with that fellow?" And from that moment they began to beat her again. Sometimes they thrashed her for an hour on end. Her mother said, "I give her the whip because she isn't my daughter any more." So she was as bad as they said. Now, you just listen to my story, nunky, will you? Well, Filka and I were always drunk. One day, when I was abed, mother comes and says, "What do you mean by lying in bed, you hound, you thief?" She abused me for some time, and then said, "Marry Akulka. They'll be glad to give her to you, and they'll give 300 rubles with her." "But," says I, "all the world knows that she's a bad girl." "Tush! The marriage ceremony cures all that. Besides, she'll always be in fear of her life from you, so you'll be in clover together. Their money would make us comfortable. I've spoken about the marriage already to Maria Stepanovna. We're of one mind about it." So I say, "Let's have 20 rubles down and I'll take her." Well, believe it or not, but I was drunk right up to the wedding day. Filka Marosov was threatening me all the time. "I'll break every bone in your body. A nice fellow you are to be engaged, and to Akulka. If I like, I'll sleep every blessed night with her when she's your wife." "You're a hound and a liar," I replied. But he insulted me so in the street before everybody that I ran to Aukudim's and said, "I won't marry her unless I have 50 rubles down this moment." "And did they really let you have her?" "Me? Why not, indeed? We were quite respectable people. Father was ruined by a fire shortly before he died. He's been a richer man than Aukudim Trofimtich. A fellow like you, without a shirt to his back, ought to be only too happy to marry my daughter," retorted Aukudim. "Just remember your door and its coat of pitch," I answered back. "Stuff and nonsense," said he. "There's no proof whatever that the girl's done wrong." "Please yourself. There's the door, and you can go about your business. But give back the money you've had." Then Filka Morozov and I agreed to send Mitri Bukov to old Alkudim to tell him that we'd insult him to his face in front of everyone. Well, as I say, I was full of drink right up to the wedding day. I wasn't sober till I got into church. As they were escorting us home from church, the girl's uncle, Mitrofon Stepanich, said, "This isn't a nice business, but it's over and done with now." Old Alkudim was sitting there crying, the tears rolling down his grey beard. "Comrade, shall I tell you what I'd done? I'd put a whip in my pocket before we went to church, and I'd made up my mind to have it out of her with that, so that all the world might know how I'd been swindled into the marriage, and not think me a bigger fool than I am." "I see. And you wanted her to know what was in store for her, eh?"
"Quiet, nunky, quiet. I'll tell you how it is with us. Directly after the marriage ceremony, they take the couple to a room apart, and the others remain drinking till they return. So I'm left alone with Akulka. She was pale, not a bit of colour on her cheeks, frightened out of her wits. She had fine hair, supple and bright as flax, and great big eyes. She was scarcely ever heard to speak. You might have thought she was dumb. An odd creature, Akulka, if ever there was one. Well, you can just imagine the scene. My whip was ready on the bed. Well, she was as pure a girl as ever was. Not a word of it was true. Impossible. True, I swear. As honest a girl as any good family could wish for. Then, brother, why had she had to undergo all that torture? Why had Filka Morozov slandered her so? Yes, why indeed? Well, I got down from the bed and went on my knees before her, and put my hands together as if I were praying, and just said to her, "Little mother, my pet, Akulka Kudimovna, forgive me for having been such an idiot as to believe all that slander. Forgive me. I'm a hound." She was seated on the bed and gazed at me fixedly. Putting both her hands on my shoulders, she began to laugh, but the tears were running down her cheeks. She cried and laughed together. Then I went out and said to the people in the other room, "Let Filka look to himself. If I come across him, he won't be long for this world." The old people were beside themselves with delight. Akulka's mother was ready to throw herself at her daughter's feet and sobbed. And the old man said, "If we had known the truth, my dearest child, we wouldn't have given you a husband of that sort." You ought to have seen how we were dressed the first Sunday after our marriage when we left church. I'd got a long coat of fine cloth, a fur cap, and plush breeches. She wore a pelisse of hareskin, quite new, and a silk kerchief on her head. One was as fine as the other. Everybody admired us. I must say I looked well, and little Akulka did too. One oughtn't to boast, but one mustn't sing small. I tell you, people like us are not turned out by the dozen. I don't doubt it. Just you listen now. The day after the wedding, I left my guests, drunk as I was, and ran about the streets, crying, "Where's that scoundrel Filka Morozov? Just let him come near me, the hound, that's all." I went all through the marketplace yelling like that. I was only just able to stand. They came after me and caught me close to Vlasov's place. It took three men to get me back to the house. Well, the whole thing was the talk of the village. The girl said when they met in the marketplace, "Well, you've heard the news. Akulka was all right." Not long afterwards, I ran across Filka Morozov, who said to me before everybody, strangers included, "Sell your wife and spend the money on drink." Jaka the soldier only married for that. He didn't sleep one night with his wife, but he got enough drink to keep his skin full for 3 years. I answered, "You hound." "But," says he, "you're an idiot. You didn't know what you were doing when you married. You were drunk. How could you know anything about it?" So off I went to the house and shouted at them, "You married me when I was drunk." Akulka's mother tried to fasten herself on me, but I cried, "Mother, you know nothing about anything except money. You bring me Akulka." And didn't I beat her? I tell you, I beat her for 2 hours running, till I dropped on the floor with fatigue. She couldn't leave her bed for 3 weeks.
"It's a dead sure thing," said Cherevin phlegmatically. "If you don't beat them, they—"
"Did you find her with her lover?"
"No. To tell the truth, I never actually caught her," said Chikov after a pause, speaking with an effort. "But I was hurt, a good deal hurt, because everyone made fun of me. The cause of it all was Filka."
"Your wife's just made to be looked at," said he.
One day he invited us round to his place and started in. "Do you just look what a good little wife he has. Isn't she tender? Isn't she fine? Nicely brought up, affectionate, and full of kindness for all the world. I say, my lad, have you forgotten how we daubed their door with pitch?" "At the moment I was hopelessly drunk. He seized me by the hair and had me on the floor before I knew where I was. Come along, dance. Aren't you Akulka's husband? I'll hold your hair for you, and you shall dance. It'll be good fun."
"Dog," I said.
"I'll bring some jolly fellows to your house," he went on, "and I'll whip your Akulka before your very eyes just as long as I please. Would you believe it? For a whole month I daren't go out of the house. I was so afraid he'd come and drag my wife through the dirt. And how I beat her for it!"
"What was the use of beating her? You can tie a woman's hands, but not a tongue. You oughtn't to thrash them too often. Beat 'em a bit, then scold 'em well, then fondle 'em. That's what a woman's made for."
Chikov remained quite silent for a few moments. "I was very much hurt," he continued. "I began it again just as before, beating her from morning till night for nothing, because she didn't get up from her seat the way I liked, because she didn't walk to suit me. When I wasn't hiding her, time hung heavy on my hands. Sometimes she sat by the window, crying silently. It hurt my feelings sometimes to see her cry, but I beat her all the same. Sometimes her mother abused me for it. 'You're a scoundrel, a gallows bird.' 'Don't say a word or I'll kill you. You made me marry her when I was drunk. You swindled me.' Old Alkudin wanted at first to have his finger in the pie. He said to me one day, 'Look here, you're not such a tremendous fellow that one can't put you down.' But he didn't get far on that track. Maria Stepanovna had become as sweet as milk. One day she came to me, crying her eyes out, and said, 'My heart is almost broken, Ivan Semyonitch. What I'm going to ask of you is only a little thing for you, but it means a good deal to me. Let her go. Let her leave you, Ivan.' Then she threw herself at my feet. 'Do give up being so angry. Wicked people slander her. You know quite well she was good when you married her.' Once again she knelt before me and cried, but I was as hard as nails. 'I won't hear a word you have to say. What I choose to do, I do, to you or anybody, for I'm crazed with it all. As for Filka Marosov, he's my best and dearest friend.'"
"You'd begun to play your pranks together again, had you?"
"No, by Jove. He was out of the way by this time. He was killing himself with drink, nothing less. He'd spent all he had on drink, and had joined the army as substitute for another citizen. In my part of the world, when a lad makes up his mind to enlist as substitute for another, he is master of the latter's house and everybody in it until he's called to the colours. He receives an agreed sum on the day he leaves, but until then he lives in the house of the man who pays him, sometimes for 6 whole months, and there isn't a horror in the whole world those fellows are not guilty of. It's enough to make folks remove the icons from the house. From the moment he consents to be a substitute for the son of the family, he considers himself their patron and benefactor, and makes them dance as he pipes. Otherwise, he calls off the bargain. So Filka Marosov played merry hell in the home of this citizen. He slept with the daughter, pulled the master of the house by the beard after dinner, and in fact did anything that came into his head. They had to heat the bath for him every day, and, what's more, give him brandy fumes with the steam of the bath, and he'd have the women lead him by the arms to the bathroom.
Once a mark of respect in Russia, but no longer used.
When he came back to the man's house after a revel elsewhere, he would stop right in the middle of the road and shout, "I won't go in by the gate. Pull down the fence." And they actually had to pull down the fence, though there was the gate right in front of him. But all that came to an end the day he joined the regiment. That day he was perfectly sober. The crowd gathered all along the street. "They're taking away Filka Morozov." He saluted right and left. Just at that moment, Akulka was returning from the kitchen garden, and immediately Filka saw her, he cried out, "Stop!" And down he jumped from the cart and threw himself at her feet. "My soul, my sweet little strawberry, I've loved you 2 long years. Now they're taking me off to the regiment with the band playing. Forgive me, good honest daughter of a good honest father, for I'm nothing but a hound, and all you've gone through is my fault." Then he flings himself down before her a second time. At first Akulka was exceedingly frightened, but she made him a low bow, bending almost double. "Forgive me too, dear boy, but I am really not at all angry with you." As she re-entered the house, I was at her heels. "What did you say to him, you she-devil, you?" Now, would you believe it? She looked at me as bold as you please and answered, "I love him better than anything or anybody in this world." I say! For the rest of that day, I never uttered one single word. Only towards evening I said to her, "Akulka, I'm going to kill you now." I didn't close an eye the whole night. I went into the little room leading off ours and drank kvass. At daybreak I returned. "Akulka, get ready and come into the fields." I had already arranged to go there, and my wife knew it. "You are right," said she. "It's quite time to begin reaping. I've heard that one labourer is ill and not working." I harnessed the cart without another word. As you go out of the town, there's a forest 15 versts long. At the end of it is our field. When we had gone about 3 versts through the wood, I stopped the horse. "Come, get up, Akulka. Your end is come." She looked at me in terror, but got up without a word. "You've tormented me enough. Say your prayers." I seized her by the hair. She had long, thick tresses. I rolled them round my arm. I held her between my knees, took out my knife, threw her head back, and cut her throat. She screamed. The blood gushed out. Then I threw away my knife. I pressed her with all my might in my arms. I put her on the ground and embraced her, yelling at the top of my voice. She screamed, I yelled, she struggled and struggled. The blood, her blood, splashed my face, my hands. It was stronger than I was, stronger. Then I took fright. I left her, left my horse, and began to run, ran back to the house. I went in the back way and hid myself in an old ramshackle bathhouse which we never used now. I lay myself down under the seat and remained hidden till dead of night.
And Akulka?
She got up to come back to the house. They found her later 100 yards from the place.
So you hadn't finished her off?
No. Chikov was silent for a while.
Yes, said Cherevina. There's a particular artery. If you don't sever it at once, the victim will continue struggling. The blood may flow fast enough, but he won't die.
But she was dead all the same. They found her in the evening, and she was cold. They told the police and searched for me. They found me at night in the old bath. And there you have it. I've been 4 years here already,
he added after a pause. "Yes. If you don't beat him, you make no way at all," said Chiverin sententiously, taking out his snuff-box once again. He took his pinches very slowly, with long pauses.
"For all that, my lad, you behaved like a fool. Why, I myself, I caught my wife with a lover. I called her into the shed, doubled her halter, and said, 'To whom did you swear to be faithful? To whom did you swear it in church? Tell me that.' And then I gave it her with my halter, beat her and beat her for an hour and a half, till at last she was quite spent, and cried out, 'I'll wash your feet and drink the water afterwards.' Her name was Clodotia,